Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Kevin Sully. He's Gordon Mack. FlowTrackPodcast at gmail.com is the email address. You can listen to the show wherever you listen to audio podcasts, and you can subscribe to the Flow Track Podcast YouTube channel. We're talking about the pre-classic on today's episodes. Don't have the full fields yet, but we have enough to talk about. We'll also be back on Friday to recap any news that happens and also touch on all the other events. Gordon, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good. Look at this. Put the screen up, Travis, if you can. There's what? You know, there's a lot of events, but only 7 fields are known. And it's Wednesday, and the meet starts on Friday. We got to solve this problem, man. We can't have only 7 fields known 48 hours before the meet starts. We just can't do that. We can't have that. We need to know more people. Why does this happen in our sport all the time, man? Why do we not? I mean, like, why? Why do we not even know this? Hell, we didn't even know fields for the Olympic 5K, like Stefano San, until like 24 hours before the event. She said, "Oh yeah, I'm tripling." Like, what? This whole we don't know who's running races. This is a problem. It's just not a good thing.
Yeah, but listen, we have 2 shows, so this is actually a good thing for us because we can do part 1. And part 2. Let's get right to it, though, because they did talk about – they did announce 1 field this morning that's not listed on there. So I want to start with the women's sprints just in general. So women's 100, we'll start there. We know the field. We have Sha'Carri Richardson going up against the podium from Tokyo. And if you look at this race as a whole, you see as an opportunity for Sha'Carri to compete. I mean, she's the biggest star who is not in Tokyo, and now she has a chance to run a race against the best women in the world. She's obviously going to be highly motivated coming into this race. But I also think the rest of the women in this field are going to be motivated too. I don't think they want to take a loss. I think Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce had silver in Tokyo. I think she wants to come back and show that she's the fastest woman in the world. So despite this being after the Tokyo Olympics, Gordon, this takes on more meaning than virtually any post-Olympics race could.
Yeah. Sorry, I was distracted by looking at the field and realizing we're going to have 2 10-6s and 3 10-7s all in the same race. It's pretty cool.
It's going to be great. It's going to be good.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, we've been talking about this race now even before we knew it would happen, right? The whole Sha'Carri Richardson situation. We were excited to see her race the Jamaicans, but then she gets banned. So then we're even more excited to see her race the Jamaicans because now they see what the Jamaicans do in the Olympic Games. They go 1-2-3, which is kind of the perfect result that you wanted for this storyline, for the Jamaicans to dominate the Olympics without Sha'Carri there. Because then that makes, when she does race them, even more what's going to happen, right? Obviously, Jamaicans are the heavy favorite, especially Elaine and Shelly-Ann. Their runs at the Olympic Games were not flukes. Elaine is 2/3 of her way through pulling off of the same Bolt, right? Winning 3 straight double-doubles. She has a double-double now. She could get a triple-double in 2024. But all that goes out the window when we get to see them race each other on, is it Friday or Saturday when the race is?
Saturday
afternoon. Yeah. Saturday afternoon, seeing Sha'Carri go up against Elaine, Shelly-Ann, Talu for that matter, and Chirica. It's going to be great. And I've said that, I think I've came already out with the take that I think Sha'Carri's going to win. That was my take. I also had another take that Sha'Carri would have won the Olympic Games. I angered some people with my thoughts.
Yeah.
But, you know.
The public is against you. I'm looking at this poll.
Public's against me.
30,000 votes. That's a big number of votes. No, 67. Yes, 33. You and I are split on this one. I just think we're in this.
10,000 people agreed with me. That's a lot of people. If I had 10,000 people on my side on any idea or thought,
that's not good.
It's almost a stadium. It's like a half of a soccer stadium. It's pretty good.
That's not good for anybody involved who knows Gordon. We're in a unique situation. We've seen people who look like they're going to be podium contenders miss the Olympics because of injury or have a bad race at trials or underperform. But what happened to Richardson is unique because she qualifies at trials, looks great, looks like she's going to be able to contend for the gold, and then has a suspension long enough to where it kicks her out of the Olympics, but not long enough to where she's done for the season. So she's still able to race. Yeah, she's had time off and not ideal leading into a big matchup, but it's not as if she had to sit for a year and then come back. And that's why she's the biggest star, as I mentioned, who missed the Olympics, but she was also the most relevant in terms of medal potential that missed the Olympics. Because you could look at other people, for example, Donovan Brazier, reigning world champion, he missed it, but he was hurt. So if you put Brazier in the, he wasn't ready to run. Sha'Carri Richardson was ready to run. It was just a suspension that kept her out. So now we're in this unique situation where not only do we have Prefontaine Classic after the Olympics and in August, but we have someone who was going to be a medal contender, gold medal contender in the race going up against the entire podium. And I'm surprised that we're getting it. I'm crossing my fingers. We got a couple of days to go to get there. I hope it's going to come through because I think it's going to be worth the wait.
It's wild seeing World Athletics scratch from the record her 3 100-meter dash results on their World Athletics profile because she was smoking weed. It's just hilarious. It's like, come on, what are we doing here?
It's is like, that off of all? Is it gone forever on everything?
I guess so. We're going to pretend it never happened because she was doing something completely. Yeah. Anyway, regardless, we've already circled the wagons on that topic. I think it's definitely going to be the marquee race of the meet. I think it's going to be the most hyped event that we've ever had post-Olympics because not only are track fans intrigued, but non-track fans are going to be intrigued. It's just Sha'Carri has found a way to take the sport to another level with her fame. I mean, look at this. Look how many Instagram followers. We talk about Instagram follower growth. Bring this up. Something happened between June and July that made her celebrity go wild, right? So there's people who win gold medals. There's people who win gold medals multiple, many, many years in a row who can't pull off this type of fame because unfortunately, you know, a lot of times celebrity is not just purely about results driven, right? It's sometimes it's outside factors in this situation. Sha'Carri's, she had double that. She had the outside factor of her personality that was very appealing. And then also the outside factor of the ban. But look at this. Alyssa Felix, she's been the most decorated, you know, that's what they say, most decorated athlete, greatest of all time, blah, 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 this, that, the other thing. Sha'Carri's been in the game for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And in one moment, she like triples what Alyssa Felix is. It's just, it's wild. It shows that's how the world works, right? It's sometimes random, right? How uniqueness of one weed ban, one, you know, personality.
It was the race too. It wasn't just a suspension. It was the trials, the performance.
There's no results found. It's one word. That's why. If you maybe
Travis is going crazy now with all these graphs and charts here. He's trying to compare Gordon now to Alyssa Felix and Sha'Carri Richardson. So I told you I was going to tell you if there had been another race that I could think of at pre-classic that matched up to this, and I got to go back to 2006. When you had Justin Gatlin versus Safa Powell. I don't know if you remember this, Gordon. The much anticipated race between those two men, the two best in the world. What do they do, Gordon? They both show up to Eugene and they run them in different heats of the 100. This is not a joke. This actually happened. I was at the meet that year and I was very confused, frustrated, and annoyed. You look up articles from that era. Here's one from the New York Times. Gatlin and Powell show how to sprint and duck. Here's one from the LA Times. Gatlin, Powell run well separately. Everybody was scratching their head about this. And we kind of get in the opposite here, right? Where they're not ducking each other. They're going right into it and they don't need to. It would have been easy for any one of these women to call it a year and pack it up, but they're not. And credit to them for going out there and racing. We also saw this morning, she's not content with just 100. Richardson's making up for lost time. She's entered in the 200 here with a ridiculous field. So you have Gabby Thomas, bronze in Tokyo in there. You have Dean Asher-Smith, who was hurt, pulled out of the 200 in Tokyo after the 100, but she's back. Prandini, Allison Felix in there as well. And so another opportunity to see Richardson here. What do you think of the decision to double?
Well, she's trying to make up for lost time, right? That's what Sha'Carri's doing. She has a lot of energy. She has a lot of races still left in her legs for the 2021 season. And She was running 200 pretty well during the regular season. You see this race. I mean, it was only 22.35. When you look back at, you know, people running 21.6s and 21.8s, it's not as impressive. But it wasn't a headwind, and it was early on in the season. It was back in May. And she showed she could handle that distance. She scratched the 200 at the trials. And, You know, some of us at the time, we thought, okay, maybe she just wasn't prepared to double. Was a scratch because she knew about the pending, the eventual, you know, marijuana ban. I don't know if she knew that yet at that time. So that could have been a reason why she ultimately scratched the 200 at the trials. But we don't know if she ever had the 200 in her mind as like an event that she wanted to star in 2021, if she was kind of saving the 200 for 2022 or 2023. Because she's young, right? It's a lot of times the 1-2 double, you don't always – a lot of times you wait till your mid-20s before you start really dabbing into trying to dominate two events. So I'm excited to see Gabby Thomas versus – Sha'Carri Richardson, the two Americans. As soon as Thomas ran that 21.6, I actually tweeted at Sha'Carri, and she never got back to me. Let's see if you can find the tweet. Travis, can you find the tweet?
Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Do you remember when you tweeted about to Caster Semenya her strategy for getting onto the Olympic team as well too? It's almost like professional athletes are not reading Gordon Mack's tweets.
I know. When were the trials? I don't remember when the trials were.
Probably right when you tweeted that. Yeah, I'm guessing the right when you tweeted that. You said, what would you have run in that 200 meter final, 9:44 p.m. on June 26th? I'm guessing that was right after the race.
Yeah, and she didn't respond. Joel Embiid responded. No, that's different. That's different. Yeah, I want her to be like, I want her to retweet it and be like, I would have won. And then everyone would have been like, oh, but, you know, I was trying to start shit. It didn't work. It didn't work.
No, okay, so comment in the chat if you'd like. We got one from Brian here in the chat. I'm looking at the chat this time. I haven't been looking at the chat, but I pulled the chat up this time just because it's a pre-classic preview, so people have a lot of opinions. Brian says, surprised the Jamaicans are racing in Eugene. Or in the U.S., excuse me, neither Shelly Ann or Elaine run very good in Eugene. You also need to consider this is a different timing for Eugene. This is not end of May, Eugene. This is end of August. And I know Shelly Ann in 2019 came to Prix and had a bad race, did not run well at all. And then people were saying, oh, what's wrong with her? And then you go back and you look, oh, well, she was kind of just going through the motions there. And then the next thing we knew, she was off and running and goes and wins in Doha and rips off an amazing season. So I'm not surprised they're there because they're both Nike athletes and Nike wants their athletes at Prix. But I also think post-Olympics, given everything this year, I think they would have been more likely to say, hey, you don't need to go. But keep in mind, this is different timing for the Prefontaine Classic. So I don't necessarily think their past results are going to be an indication of what they're going to be able to put out here. I think if Thompson, I don't expect Thompson to do another 1061. That was an otherworldly performance, and we need to appreciate that for what it is. But could Fraser Price run faster than she did in Tokyo? Absolutely. I think she could. But think about all the physical toll that the Olympics took, the emotional toll, then coming down, and then now having to finish out the season. We don't know. I think some people are going to be strong, and some people are going to come out a bit flat. And there's no way of knowing. We see a little bit of that post-Olympic trials here too, but Olympics is different because it's everybody in the world, and that's really the big thing. That's really the carrot at the end. So we shall see. We shall see. But I'm excited to see her in both, particularly that women's 100. It's going to be very, 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 very good.
Yeah, I think Sha'Carri has an extreme advantage over the Jamaicans in this race. Not have to come off the Olympics, not have to come off of, you know, traveling to Tokyo, quarantining, doing another whole thing. She gets to just do it in her backyard. She just has a one quick trip, 2-hour flight from California, wherever she's training. I'm not sure where she's training.
Florida. So she's coming Florida. About as that's pretty far. Florida and Jamaica, but like, are kind of close to each other.
Yeah, but there's a difference between Florida. You're coming off of your Tokyo trip and back, and the high and the low, all the media availability. Sha'Carri hasn't talked to anyone. I guess she was doing a music video with Kanye, so that might have been a little bit of a distraction. But there's no rounds. I really do think the race is superly, that's a new word I made up, advantage to Sha'Carri because she didn't have to do the Olympics and it's not rounds. So more chaos can happen in a one race final. And that's in her hometown, not her hometown, it's in her home country. The Jamaicans, you know, to go get through the visa, do this, that, and the other thing. It's complicated. So I think if Sha'Carri had to go do this race in Jamaica, you know, people will be thinking like, oh, you got to travel to Jamaica. Oh, you got to go through this. You got to do that. Oh, okay. You got to get in the hotel, all this stuff. But Sha'Carri is like, oh, it's just in your backyard in Eugene. So
I think it's less about travel and more about race reps. And is the fact that she hasn't raced since trials going to hamper her more than the other women who are coming off of a big meet at the Olympics, right? We talked about rest versus rust before. And that's the push and pull here that we're going to see in this race. And I'm sure other races, we're going to get results that counter it. Because I'm sure in other events, then you're going to see people who, for example, like the women's 8, you know, you're comparing someone like Kate Grace, who didn't run at the Olympics but went to Europe, versus Ajay Wilson, who went to the Olympics but went out in the semis, versus Athang Mo, who won the gold medal, versus Gemma. You know, there's just all these, there's going to be all these data points throughout these different events. Okay, so let's go. Do you want to stick with the sprints and go to the 100?
Sure.
Men's 100?
Let's do it.
Okay, so men's 100, there's a lot to learn from this race. And I don't want to blow it out of proportion because it's a post-Olympics race. But when you look at the people entered in this race, and I'll just go and highlight a few. So you have Bromell, who's entered in this race, came in as the Olympic favorite, went out in the semis in Tokyo. I want to see what he has. You know, was Tokyo just an aberration? Is he going to get back into the 9.8s and 9.7s? He obviously ran great in Eugene at the trials. Don't know. DeGrasse, gold in the 200. He was bronze in the 100, always solid. Curley, another opportunity for him in the 100. Ran 9.8 mid, you know, Olympic silver medalist. He could win this race, obviously, without saying, he doesn't even need to have an overperformance, really. That's how good Fred Curley is in 100. And then you go down to Michael Norman. And you can make the case that Michael Norman's best race since early track season in 2019 was his 100 that he ran at AP Ranch in 2020 when he ran the 9.86. Like you could make that argument. There's also a situation here where what if Michael Norman does that again and beats this field? His teammate, Rye Benjamin, very confident in him. He's not shying away. he says that he has a hot take that Michael Norman could break the world record in the 100. So that tells me at least that Michael Norman's loose. Like he's not overly worried about this because his friend and training partner is posting things like that online. Gordon, are there going to be any 400 meter runners left? Is my question. Like what's going to happen if Michael Norman does run a 9.8 in this race and gets, say, Curly runs 9.84, Michael Norman runs 9.87. What do we do?
We need this to happen though, because let's be honest, when you have the mixed 4x4 and alternates, we need to start pulling away from all the 400 meter runners and start putting them in the 100 and the 200. You could argue then. I mean, I'm sure Noah Lyles would never want to do it, but Noah Lyles could probably run a fast 400. So can Grant Holloway. So maybe we do some trades. We take some of the quarter guys and we put them all in the hundreds and the short sprints, and then take Noah Lyles and Grant Holloway and put them in the 400s. I'm just
switch
kidding.
Switch it all up.
But yeah, it's going to be wild. It'll be interesting to see what Norman does, because he's able to show whether that 986 was like an aberration or the norm. We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. I am excited that he's doing it, because it shows that he's still thinking about these shorter sprints, right? He's still thinking about the 200 probably and the 100. We talked to show this, you know, comparing him to Tyson Gay, Van Niekerk, and Michael Johnson and Usain Bolt. Eventually, Fred Curley's going to be on this list. We just need Fred Curley to run a fast 200, and then it's going to be wild. Because, you know, Michael Norman has run 19.7 in the 200, which is a super elite time. Once Fred Curley figures out the turn and he has his 200 down, Fred Curley's going to be number one on that list.
Well, and Norman's already figured out the turn. He just hasn't run the race a ton because he stuck to the 400, which would make sense because he ran 43:45 in April as a season opener in 2019. Of course you'd stick with the 400. Who do you think stands the most to gain from this race? Because we talked last week, the biggest races we wanted to see remaining, and we just said we wanted to see anything with Bromell and Norman, because those were the two that we were still scratching our head about after the Olympics, trying to figure out what went wrong for them. And now we get them both in the same race, not at the distance I would have expected for Norman. But who do you think, when you look at this whole roster, has the most to gain from this pre-classic men's 100?
I mean, the people who have the most to gain are the non-medalists, right? So I would say Curley and DeGrasse are kind of like, there's nothing for them to prove, right? They already proved that they are top tier in the short sprints.
Mm-hmm.
Gatlin doesn't really have anything to prove because he's on the way out, right? If Gatlin runs fast, is he all of a sudden say, I'm coming back in 2022? I think he already said this was his last year. Maybe he comes out and runs 9.8 and he's like, hey, I'm doing 2022, which would be great. It'd be wild. Gillespie might have something to prove because he was the anchor for the 4x1 and people kind of blamed him for not being able to close on a few guys. So if he comes out and runs 9.8, then people will be like, oh, Gillespie, you're pretty, you know. Baker, I don't think has anything to prove. He just had a bat. He's already run a fast time. He won the Monaco meet. Him winning or losing this meet doesn't really mean much. Bromell has, I think, something to prove to show that he's behind his injury. The injury's behind him. Because
you keep talking about the injury. What do we know? You keep saying he was injured. We have no evidence that he was injured.
Dealing with an ankle. Yeah, yeah. There's been reports he's been dealing with an ankle. Yeah.
Okay. I never saw it.
Okay. Well, that's what I heard.
An ankle?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's been dealing with something, and we saw it started up in the Monaco meet.
I didn't see any quotes that from him that said that. I could have missed something. Okay. Someone will remind me if I did. But he ran the 4x1.
Yeah, but he wasn't like injured where he was running 10-1. He could still at least run a 4x1. So I think the most to prove, I guess, is Bromell. Like you said, Bromell and Norman. We're go full circle to prove those are two. Because Norman is, you know, he doesn't have an individual medal from the Olympics. So he can come out here and win this race and beat multiple medalists. You know, beat Curley, beat DeGrasse. That looks good. It's like, whoa, okay. maybe you, that's like a big bullet point on your 2021 resume would be this win. It's just that Curley and DeGrasse don't really have, don't need to update the resume. The resume is pretty good as of right now. So
fair. I do like that world that you created in the beginning where everybody just switches events before the next championship. It's Curley in the 100, it's Norman in the 200, and I guess you bump Lyles up to the 400 or Holloway up to the 400. Like, who would have? I mean, if we have a 100 team next year in the US with Norman and Curley on it, that would just be, again, the 400 as an event would be, guys, what are we doing?
Guys, what about?
I'm right over here. Us? What about me? What about me? It's hard enough to get people to run me. And now everybody's leaving. The people that were really good, you're all gone. Yeah. The one person I would like to see added, or if someone scratches, I hope Marvin Bracey's on standby after his 985.
Yeah. That would be cool. Do you want to talk a little bit about the four by one? Mentioned Craven Gillespie is in this race, and I said he has something to prove because people were kind of talking about him being the anchor and wasn't able to close up on the Ghana guy. Craven Gillespie did a 18-minute reaction video to the 4x1 where he kind of talked about the behind the scenes of what actually went down for Team USA when it came to preparing for this 4x1. And he gave some interesting tidbits. First thing he talked about was he basically confirmed the thoughts that we all had of why does USA not run as well, and we were thinking it's lack of practice. And he was like, yes, we did not practice. He spent like the first 8 minutes of the video. I suggest you guys all go watch it. Go to Craven Gillespie's YouTube channel. He basically, for the first 8 minutes of the video, detailed like the schedule and talked about how, you know, Kenny Benderick and Noah Lyles were never going to be on the 4x1 for practice. If anything, they would be on the final, but
yeah,
they would have been on a final 4x1 with zero practice. Then they talked about how Bromell, Baker, and Curley never practiced for the 4x1 only until the 100 was done. So Gillespie and Micah Williams were the only ones practicing 4x1 exchanges because they didn't have individual events. So then once Curley and Bromell and Baker were added to practice time, they really only had 1 day of practice. And the original order that they thought they would have got changed because of Bromell exiting the, not making the final in the 100. So it made Bromell want to be in the prelim. So basically, the thought that I got out of this, they had no idea their order going into the Olympics. And I feel like every other country knows their order going into the Olympics, but they were letting the results of the Olympic finals and seeing what happens in the 200 dictate who runs the 4x1. And
yeah,
I remember going to Houston. Yeah. Houston knew their order, their 4x1 in March for the June race. They knew their March. They knew the order of the 4x1 for their June final. That's how colleges work, right? They're like, we know you're the four. We're gonna get the order right. We're gonna practice exchanges for 3 months, and then put it together at the NCAA final. In USA, clearly, they're like, oh no, we're gonna have one practice. Well, two guys. Well, only one of them is gonna be in it. Like, Craven Gillespie spent the entire week practicing exchanging with Micah Williams, all for there to. For him not even be part of it and have him be an anchor, right? So it basically confirmed the idea that Team USA doesn't really prioritize the 4x1, which is why we have the situation that we get. And he said, you can have 4 9-8 guys. You don't have good exchanges. Yeah. You're not going to do well. So
I think the interchangeable parts thing and looking and waiting on the results, I think that's all well and good for the 4x4. I think the 4x1, with what we've seen the U.S. men do over the past 15, 20 years now, you could just say, let's just pick a squad and stick with it. If you have to roll with 4 10-0 to 10-0-5 guys, you still have enough talent to win. Just get the exchanges clean and live with that.
Yeah. And Gillespie even hinted that there have been like coaching changes last minute. The original coach got pulled. He didn't really go into details why, or
that's not good.
Political reason of the why or whatever. But their coach that they had changed last minute. It's like, what are we doing? Why are we changing the most important coach? You could argue we have an official coach, right, for Team USA. It was Mike Holloway, Coach Holloway. But like they're more of like just, you know, more of an administrator, right? They're just like making sure, okay, you're good, you're good. Everyone has their own personal coach. And all the coaching really has been completed by the time you get to the Olympic Games. But the one coach that is most important than any other coach is the 4x1 coach. Because that's actually coaching. That's actually teaching the athletes. This is what we're doing. You don't need to teach Galen Rupp how to drink a water bottle or change his hat in a marathon. You don't need to teach Brittany Reese how to prepare for her long jump competition. She already knows. She's ready to go. But you do need to teach four guys who don't train together, who probably have minimal words conversations with each other because they're competitors, how to become one, you know? So anyway, it was interesting.
Here's what I think.
Enjoy it.
Here's what I think. Before I said, hey, just take 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, make them the relay team and be good with it because you have enough talent. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 4, 5, 6, 7, excuse me. You don't want to do a 5x1. That'd be complicated, but you have enough talent in that next group to win. But if someone in that first three wants to do it and commits to the practices, then you should let them on. But I think a week after the trials, when everything's calmed down, they should set the team and you should get commitment. And if you're the number one person and you don't want to do the practices, that's totally fine, but they'll put somebody else on the team. And the team should be the same in the semis as it is going to be in the final. And they need to be okay with the fact that you're not going to have, you may not get a commitment from everybody. And if you miss the practice and don't do what you're supposed to do, then you just do the next person up. We talked about Italy, runner up in world relays and now the world champions. Back in May, they had 75% of the team that they put out in Tokyo. The United States, if they went to the world relays, would not have had 75% of the team. That would not have, three of those four guys would not have been on a world relays team in May. It just wouldn't have happened. Would not have happened.
And I tell you, if who finished 4, 5, 6, 7? So Kenny B, Craven Gillespie, Michael Williams, and was Justin Gatlin 7?
Or was it?
I think it was Gatlin.
Yeah, might have. Okay, he pulled up.
So if we say that's the Lyles team, yeah. So if it was Lyles. Okay. So if we said it was Kenny B, Michael Williams, Craven Gillespie, and Noah Lyles' team, that team clearly could have won. And we said, that's the team. Romel, do you want to be on the team? If you want to be on the team, though, you're allowed. We'll kick Noah Lyles off the team if you want to be on it. But if you want to be on it, you need to do practice. Does he say yes to that agreement? Does he agree to do practice in exchange? Yeah, he'll say, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Would Ronnie Baker say yes? Yes, he would say yes. Yeah. Would Fred Curley say yes? Yes. Would Kenny B say yes? He'd be like, yeah, I know I got the 200. But yeah, I want to be on that team. Like, if you gave them the ultimatum, whether, like, we're allowing the athletes to not have to worry about practice. But if we say you either want being on the team requires the practice, we get it. You got the individual events. If you care about your individual events and you don't think you can do the practice, that's fine. Best of luck. We're going to cheer for you, but we got to go to the next person.
Yeah.
I guarantee you.
No hard feelings.
We would end up.
No hard.
Yeah. I guarantee you.
No, it's fine.
Kenny B, Fred Curley, Ronnie Baker, and Bromell would have been the 4x1 in the prelim. And it's weird because, like, I mean, Andre DeGrasse, he was in the prelim, and he just came off of winning the 200. So it's not like it was impossible. Yeah. Like, it's possible for these guys to do it. So
these guys come up running 3, 4 events in high school, in college, right? They can do it for the Olympics. I'm sure they're ready to. I just think everything's been way overcomplicated. It doesn't need to be this difficult. Do you want to do it or do you not want to do it? If you want to do it, you need to show up, do the practice, run the first round, run the second round. It's not like the 4x4. We're not going to wing it with the handoffs anymore. And if people don't want to do it, Travis, pull up the yearly list, sort by Americans, men, 100. All right? Let's look at how many. So if the first eight don't want to do it, do you know what the U.S. has? We got, scroll down. Look at all these 10-0 people you could put. Look at, keep going. We got 12 guys under 10. Keep going. We could put some
Terrence Laird on it.
Yeah. Look at this. Look at all these. Keep going. You could put, you know who has guys that run this way? Italy. And they win. Yeah. You can build a team around 10-10 guys. That's my point. So if people don't want to do it, then just sub them in. You could totally win with one sub 9-9 guy, great passes from everybody else, and some 10-0 people or some high 9-9 people. This is Italy's list. You have Jacobs as the outlier. Then you have Tortu. Tortu's broken 10 before, but this year he's a 10-10 guy. You have three guys who broke in 10-2 this year, and they won gold. The passes are important. Yeah. The passes are important.
And this isn't on the athletes, right? Because the athletes are just doing what the coaches are allowing them to do. They're allowing them to focus 100% on their individual events. And if your coach says that's what you can prioritize, you're going to do it. It's on the coaches to force their athletes to practice. And if the athlete says no, then it's on the coaches to be like, okay, are you sure? Because if you say no, we're going to replace you. And then if they still say no, that's fine. And we then win still more golds, right? More people. Yeah. So, yeah, they need to change it.
Well, listen, anybody who's coached at any level knows sometimes you need to take a short-term loss for a longer-term gain. So maybe in the short, you need to say no and you need to hold the line on this policy in the short term to let people know you're serious so that the long term, then people will fully commit to it. Anthony in the chat says it's claimed that the agents of the athletes have a say in who runs. And that's something Carl Lewis brought up when he did his Instagram live. Basically trying to get people into the early rounds so that way you get a gold medal. Well, the agents shouldn't run the show. I'm sorry. They shouldn't.
They want the bonus, right? They probably get a percentage of their money. Like, oh, if my athlete has an extra medal, therefore I get an extra little something, something.
And that's great for them. I don't blame them for advocating for their athlete, but it's the other people's job to say, we're going to do what's in the best interest of the team. And that's not it, because it's clearly not working.
So I'm guessing that comment is basically hinting at maybe potential that Rommel, when he didn't make the, like, they're planning on only to like, hey, if you make a final, you're in the final, the 4x1, and Rommel not making a final, Rommel was going to be taken off the final, the 4x1. So Rommel would have basically been kind of switched situation like Quinera Hayes, where it's like, crap, now I'm going to be replaced in the 4x1 and I'm going to go home with no medals. So we had to figure out, they had to figure out a way, hey, let's put Rommel on the prelim. But what should have happened is Rommel should have just been on the team no matter what. And he should have done the practice. And there should have been no like contingency, you're off the team if you don't make an individual final. Like, no, you're on the team or you're off the team. The team is known on August 1st and we just go. But
yes, 100%. And well, no, before August 1st. The team needs to be decided before you get on a plane. Well, July 1st, when the meet's over. And people are talking about there's no relay camp and they couldn't do it. I mean, they could have gotten people together stateside before they flew over. You could get people together before their individual. There's no rule that says you have to wait for relay practice until your individual event is over. That doesn't exist. Right? All right. Back to Pri. What else are you excited about?
Women's 800. Let's talk about that.
Feng Mo. Headlines this race. Deep field, though. Good field. Got a lot of stars from Tokyo in there, as well as Kate Grace, who's been on fire, running 157s all over the world. And you also have, as I mentioned before, Ajay Wilson, Raven Rogers, Gemma Riki, Keely Hodgkinson, silver medalist, Natoya Gul, Halima Nakai. So this is going to be good. And this is going to be, it's been a year of firsts for a Thing Mo. And this is her first truly fast Diamond League 800 attempt.
Here's a question for you. Let's assume the field, the race is fast, and Athingbo wins. She runs a fast time. She runs like 154, crazy, maybe in a 153. I don't know. But Athingbo wins handedly, and it's fast. And second place runs like 156 low. And the person who gets second is Kate Grace. When you have to do a ranking at the end of the year in 2021, who are the top three 800 meter runners in the world? Who would, where would Kate Grace
in ranked? The world?
Number two.
I think she'd have to win this race for her to be number two.
Really? Not getting second to Athingbo?
I think she's got to win. I put a lot of weight in the Olympics, especially based on how fast they ran. She beats Athingbo, though. I'll put her on the list.
I don't know. I think running 156 and beating Hodgkinson, Rogers, Riki, like beating basically second, third, and fourth that finish at the Olympics.
Yeah.
That means something. And in a fast time. So.
So she's got, well, because, but look at, like, look at Riki's season, though. She's got two sub 157s on there as well, too. And she made it to the Olympic final. If you're basing it just on fast times and not performance at the Olympics, then you're going to introduce some other people as well, too. But I think if she beats Athingbo, I think you're 100% right. I think you're bang
on. She's
not going to
beat Athingbo, but I just want to see, is there anything Kate Grace can do outside of being Athingbo the rest of the year for us to consider her top three 800-meter runner in the world?
Counterpoint, is there anything Kate Grace can't do? Because right now she's doing everything. So has her momentum slowed at all? Are you going to bet against Kate Grace?
I'm not. I'm betting her to get second if he can do that. There's no odds for that, though, unfortunately. So,
What's your time prediction for Mo?
I think she runs 154.
That would be something.
I think she becomes the top eighth
woman under 155.
Or top eight, yeah.
I think 154. I think even another 155.
I think she runs 154.5. I think she runs 154.5.
Yeah, I'm curious how the rabbiting is going to go, because we've talked about this before. A lot of good 800 meter runners haven't needed a rabbit in the past. Does it elevator? The rabbiting's not always that consistent in Diamond League races. Sometimes it ends up hurting more than it helps. But I just think even if she runs another 155, that's an incredible mark and one that is rare. Semenya, obviously, we have recent memory of doing that a whole bunch of times and breaking 155 as well on a couple occasions. But just to show the consistency at that level, I think is going to be a good step forward for her. Now, you watch that Olympic race, and it leaves no doubt that she could do it again because she looks so effortless. So it's hard to watch that and think, oh, that was a one-off. She looked pretty smooth.
Dude, we haven't seen the best of the thing yet. I'm telling you, like, 2022 is going to be wild. She's going to run indoor season, and we're going to be like, holy crap. Like, when she runs her first 800 or 400 or 600 indoors, we're going to be like, dude, what's she going to run in 2022 outdoors? Because I think I know we always like to overhype, like, young talent. Like, maybe this is the one. I think she's running 153 in less than 365 days from now. That's what I think.
All right, let's jump to the Bowerman Mile for the men, the 1500 for the women, and then we'll do the rest of the pre-events tomorrow once they get finalized here.
We give a shout out. We have a super chat. For those who don't know, we get the super chat option. KD.
What's that mean?
Gave a super chat. What's that mean? It means they chatted to us and they want us to read it. And so we're going to read it. And it just gives a big shout out to Richardson. It says Richardson is young and she's coming 100. Can't wait. So we just got to, when someone gives a super chat, you just got to say what they say. I just didn't know
what it was.
It's federal law. It's,
okay. I'm learning all these new terms for YouTube here. A super chat. Okay, cool. Next day says Athingbo doesn't need a rabbit. She can control the race in the front. I agree. I agree. Again, Semenya, you go back and watch some of those races, especially towards the latter part of Semenya's 800 meter career. She did a lot of those solo. So pretty exciting.
Before we talk, what event do you want to talk about next?
I just wanted to do a few minutes on the Bowerman Mile, a few minutes on the 1500 for the women. And then I want to talk about Pete Julian's new name of his group and his launch video.
Let's talk about Pete Julian first. Let's talk about the new group. Let's do that first.
Okay. Okay, can we play this? Can we play this video?
Can we play it with audio?
All right, so,
yeah. When we watch party.
I don't know.
Does it have audio?
I don't know if we can play audio. So basically, I think this video was directed by M. Night Shyamalan. I can't confirm that, but it's incredibly dramatic. It starts out with Pete Julian looking through the rearview mirror. There's windmills. There's animals. There's dragonflies. There's a forest. There's nature. There's a big wave. There's a lot going on here, Gordon. There's a shot of Pete coaching and then a logo of a torch. And it says a storm is coming. So there's a lot going on here.
Yeah. So first thing I noticed is. Oh, what? Go.
I was just saying, I asked them in February, are you closer to a group name? And they said they had something, but then things kind of, it was going to take a while and there was going to be a proper launch at some point. Because I floated with him some of the silly names. I said, are you guys going to be called Pete's Dragons or Phil's Knights or any of these other things? And he said, no, they're actually going to do a real thing.
So I did notice they got a Twitter handle already created, Pete's Dragons. Click on that Twitter handle. No posts yet. I feel like Pete's Dragons is a herring. It's a
yeah, it's not. They've been joking about that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's real. But you watch the video, they show some interesting imagery. They show a goat twice. So they're implying that greatest of all time. They show obviously Pete Julian a bunch of times. They use the phrase a storm is coming. So you're like, maybe the word storm, because Portland, it rains a lot. Maybe are they gonna be like Storm Elite or Storm Track Club, Portland Storm Track Club. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what this name is going to be. If you have any ideas what they think they're going to call themselves, throw it in the chat. But I think it's going to be something with storm there. Because they said a storm is coming. I mean, Portland Storm? Are they going to use Portland? It'd be Nike. It'd be like Nike Storm Track Club. I don't know.
So, go to Constance Klosterhall. There's a lot going on. So they're all posting about it, right? And Jordan Hesse's in the group, so she's posting about it. Brazier's posting about it. Constance Klosterhall's in caption, though. I mean, it's not safe for work here. I don't understand it. She wrote, don't F it up. Hashtag Nike. Then also, I was looking at Raven Rogers' Instagram. Travis, I sent you this picture. She posted. So Raven Rogers, obviously Donovan Brazier are in the group. She posted this picture on Instagram, not related to the launch, but it's of Donovan Brazier sleeping in the back of a truck, and I don't understand it. I texted it to you, Travis. It's in your text, and it's a joke. Like she says, "Happy Monday," and a crying emoji, but it's like I don't understand it because it's Brazier sleeping on a mattress in the back of a truck. It looks like he's there for like a drive-in movie, but it doesn't look like it's like late at night. Like I don't understand. Did you see this, Gordon?
I have not seen this, but that is hilarious. I don't know what
that
means.
I don't know what's going on. What's going on with this group?
Is this like the U-Haul kind of like a way to tell them like they're moving somewhere because of the U-Haul in the back? Maybe I don't know. Like
no, I don't know. That's a legit air mattress. And the caption's cut off. It says Happy Monday and there's a crying emoji. So I don't know. I want to know. Does anybody know, Donovan? If you're watching, let us know what's going on. Because the video happened a long time ago, so it's not like that was prepped for the shoot or anything like that. Like it's not like a tease for the shoot. It looks like he legitimately fell asleep in the back of his truck in a random parking lot in Portland. I just want to know what's going on.
Here's the thing that we really need to know what's going on. Go to Donovan Brager's version of this Instagram.
This is a lot of...
Just put it up. Put it up on the screen. What do you see there, Kevin? Top comment.
He says, "Oh, a thingmo smiley face." I mean, they're both Aggies. People read so much into it. Everybody likes everybody's posts, even people from different brands like people's stuff.
Is she joining the team? Is that what that is?
No, I think it's just a smiley face.
Hey, but it has 33 likes, 38 likes.
It does.
It's like a casual smiley face. It's not an emoji. It's, you know, maybe.
Doesn't. Look at the go to the beginning.
A bunch of that people shot, I've never heard of.
That shot with Pete Julian looking through the rearview mirror, doesn't it look like it's like Bradley Cooper in a movie? Like he's on like some sort of mission. That's what it reminds me. Like that's a dramatic shot. The shot of somebody looking through the rearview mirror. But I don't know. I think it's just a name. They could sell gear, so it makes sense. A lot of people bought NOP gear. You'd see NOP gear on the trail. You'd see it in places far away from Oregon. So it makes sense that they would try to merchandise this group. Here's Jessica Hall's quote. Fate whispers to the Warriors, "You cannot withstand the storm." The Warriors whisper back, "We are the storm. A new team is coming. Stay tuned."
I think the word storm is going to be in the title. And also, if you watch this video over and over again, it doesn't really do a good job at promoting like Portland weather, because everything just looks kind of like murky and dark and like overcast the entire time, which I guess that's the Northwest for you. But yeah.
Okay, hold on. So I don't know if this is true, but in the chat, Breezy, who could be credible, could not be, but says Raven needed help moving. Donovan helped her, but they got stuck in the storage unit area or something, like the gates locked. So basically they had to camp out. If that's true, good job, Donovan Brazier. That's a great, great gesture as a friend. Helping someone move getting locked and then sleeping. Having an air mattress handy and then blowing it up and putting it in the truck, in the back of the truck is a lot of commitment here. So Shigeru Sako's calling it Sugar Elite. There's just everybody's got their own name here. And then Craig Engels is talking. Craig Engels is talking to the media about retiring. It's a very, very confusing time right now. And I'm glad that there's goats in this video and big waves.
And a dog.
There's just so much
this
stuff.
We need more content like this where we don't know what we're seeing. You know, we need to know. Like, I love the Pete's Dragon red herring because kind of get you off the scent of the trail.
Yeah. All right, Breezy update. He says, seriously, she posted it on her stories. Okay, so if she posted on her stories, it's got to be true. They just went to the stock footage file and went nuts. Whoever edited this was just like, goat, yes. Wave, yes. Windmill, why the hell not? Put it all in here. Chop it up with a tunnel. And let's get that awesome shot of Pete looking at the rearview mirror. Some shots of the shoes. Let's gut it all in there. Export. We got it.
For the record, I like the video. Just going to say that. I like the video.
Oh, I like it too. Listen, anytime you can get M.I. Shyamalan to collab on a Nike project, you know, you're going to get a lot of eyeballs on it. So, Forrest's. Man, there's just a lot. It's just... See, I saw that wave and I was like, man, are they as into that 100-foot wave dock on HBO as I am? It must be because they're throwing the wave in there. Well done. We'll keep tabs on this as the story develops. The thing, though, I should mention is they want – people are interested in, like, when you add new people to a group. And I don't – and Hase, it's been common knowledge because anybody who follows her on Instagram sees her training with them. I don't know if they're adding anybody new, but that would be the thing that would really – shake things up. Anyway, you want to talk about Bowerman Mile? Chariot, Ingebrigtsen, who wins this?
I mean, I'm saying Ingebrigtsen because I went on record saying the dam has been broken and now it's Jakob's time to shine for the next 5 years. So I don't think Jakob's going to lose another race until 2023.
I like how this guy breaks a 10-race losing streak to Timothy Chariot, and then you're crowning him for the next 3 years. Just, that's it. Never going to lose again. Beat him once. Yep, can't foresee any situation where Timothy Chariot turns the tables. This race is going to be way different. And I'm not saying Jakob can't win, because of course he can win, but you talked about the sprinters flying from Jamaica. Well, Chariot and Ingebrigtsen are going to have to get on a much longer flight. They're running a one-off race, no rounds. It's going to be a lot different. What I'm watching for in this race is, does Timothy Chariot adjust his tactics at all, knowing that Ingebrigtsen is now capable of sitting on that fast pace and kicking past? Do we give any indication about what 2022 is going to look like based on what happened in Tokyo and in this race? I say no. I say he's going to stick to it. Because if you have a method that works for you, I don't think you're going to abandon it just based on one race. But I want to see if he does try to switch things up, maybe not be as aggressive in the middle, maybe tries a drive from shorter out and forces Ingebrigtsen maybe to do some work if he wants it to go fast.
No, I mean, they're going to go from the gun. There's no sit and kick here. They want to run a fast mile. They still have very modest mile PBs. So I think they really want to get into the 347, 348 range.
Oh, fast. They're going to go faster than that.
Yeah, maybe 346. Sure. So I think they're coming for a PB. They're not coming for the Prefontaine win, right? They already got their win that they wanted, which is an Olympic medal. They're coming for a fast time. It's them versus the clock. Yeah. So.
All right. All right. Also in this race, you got Matthew Centrowitz of the United States. Only 8 people listed right now. Jai Edwards, Oliver Hoare, Jake Hayward. I would love to see Josh Kerr in this race. Mix it up. I'd like to see Cole Hawker in this race. But we do not have anybody other than these 8 as of right now.
Yeah, Centrowitz 7 days ago put a post about being disappointed about not being able to make the final. You know, there was a lot of, not expectations, but like confidence going into Centro's season, seeing him able to quickly get back on top, winning all those fast 15, winning, not fast, but winning the 1500s on U.S. soil a bunch of times, look good in workouts. He remember did that 3 800s in the track meet workout. He did lose at the trials, but you were thinking, oh, well, Hawker's another animal, so a loss to Hawker isn't the end of the world. Went for the American record attempt, fell short in there in the mile. And he's been quoted saying, like, I feel like I'm in my best shape ever. So you could tell that the result of not even making the final at the Olympics was definitely a disappointment for him and for Centrowitz fans and for American fans. So maybe this would be a chance for him to kind of show that his – mishap in the semis at the Olympics was an aberration, and he can come out here and set a new PB in the mile, you know, try to run a 3:48, maybe 3:47. We'll see. But clearly it's not the end of Centro. I have always said, like, maybe this is the changing of the guard of, you know, eventually the likes of Leo Manzano and Bernard Lagat had to step aside for the young group coming in, and Centro was one of those people who kind of took the mantle of the dominant figure. And now Hawker's kind of doing it at a similar age that Centro did it.
Yeah.
But Centro's not going anywhere. I mean, he's still talented. He still recently ran 3:49. So it's like not.
Yeah. So the question is, we got a question in the chat. Can he PR? Absolutely. Because basically, can he run faster than he did in a time trial a couple weeks ago where the pacing was a bit all over the place and it was just himself over the last few meters? All these guys should get PRs because you don't run the mile that much. And you look at a 3:28 for Jakob Ingebrigtsen, that equates out to a 3:45 mile, roughly. How many people in history have run sub 3:46 in a mile? I think it's only 3 people who have done that for the men. It's Garouge, it's Nien, and it's Morsali who have run sub 3:46. But he could absolutely, you know, Jakob could absolutely do that just based on his 1500 times, and obviously so could Chariot. So I could see a lot of people setting PBs. I mean, if Centro, what did he run in Tokyo when he missed the fall?
Oh, sorry.
In Tokyo, ran 3:33. in that race. So I mean, that's a 350 right there. So in an even paced race, I think he could for sure run 348. Problem is, in this race, 348 might not get you in the top four or five. Yeah. It's true. It's going to be really fast. We're putting up the all-time list here. Garouge ran, obviously, world record. Nien, 343. Morsley, 344. And then there's all the way to 346. But if you equate those over to 1,500-meter times, right, Garouge's is right at 326, which is what he ran. But then that Steve Cram, 346, who's number four right now, you subtract 17 seconds, that's 329. That's people run 329s now, and we don't have a meltdown about it being ridiculously fast.
Yeah, I think Central's going to run faster here, because when he ran his 349, he did a lot of it by himself. He's not going to be by himself in this situation. So I feel like the presence of Ingebrigtsen and Chariot and all the other guys is going to give Centro someone to chase and follow during the middle part of that race that he didn't have when he went for that solo 346 attempt back in July. So I can see him easily, if he thought he could run 346 in that situation, he should feel like he could run 346 in this situation. So I'm not sure if he's going to run 346, but I could definitely see him get 348, maybe even a 347.
Well, and he's not a big time trial guy, and he's especially not a time trial by yourself type guy. So putting more people in the race, I think it's gonna help him. Women's race is gonna be exciting because you got Faith Kipyegon, possibly the best women's miler of all time, going against Laura Muir. Those are the two headliners in there. Although again, it's another very deep field with a lot of the best in the world. You also have Gabrielle Debus Stafford, Jessica Hull is there. For the Americans, you have Corey McGee, Gisette Norris, and Shannon Osika. But Kipyegon's only a second off the world record. I think we're going to at least see an attempt at that, Gordon, from her.
You think in this race, it's going to feel like Monaco, where they're going to be going pretty hard in the beginning?
I think she's going to go. Well, so you need a rabbit that can go 1,000 at that pace, and you run out of people that you could actually use. However, I think she's certainly in the shape to do it. She ran so fast in the semis and in the finals in Tokyo, and those were with medals on the line. You'd think if the focus is just a time, she could perhaps drop it. But I think where she does her best work, Kipyegon does her best work with Hassan in the race. Yeah. And Hassan's not going to be in the race. She's going to be going for the 5K world record the night before. So you can't really replace that type of competition, because she was there with Kippy. I don't want to say she was a rabbit, but she was pushing her even when she was behind her, but she was there with her in Florence and in Monaco, and made it feel like there was a real sense of urgency. It wasn't just her versus the clock. So without her there, the gap should be bigger. Although Muir can push during the middle of the race. Maybe she can keep her company through 1,200. But if you go out at 350 pace, you're not going to have many people to run with. That's just the rule of thumb.
Yeah. I think I feel like Kipyegon's season has kind of been kind of under the radar in a weird way. And I think that's mainly because of Safwan Hassan, right? Because you see what Hassan is doing when it's all about the triple talk, and she's kind of been taking over the spotlight of women's distance running. But Kipyegon seats in front of our eyes is showing like she's like the fittest she's ever been. She's on the verge of world record pace. And maybe this is a moment for her to try to get back on the spotlight and be like, hey, I can break the world record. And she comes closer, maybe even does it. And once again, though, we probably will have a world record from Safwan Hassan 24 hours prior. So she still will be under the radar, because we'll be talking about Safwan Hassan's world record more or whatever. But Kipyegon, man, she's doing – if Safwan Hassan wasn't around, she would be the talk of the town. But because of the whole triple attempt, it just kind of – her
– she should be still, because it's different events. And when Hassan came to her event this year – She got beat. Smoked. Now, Stefan beat her in 2019, but this year, Kip Yegon's been the best. So you got, this is her, you talked about her year, Gordon. 351.07, 353.1, 353.9, 356.8 are four best times.
Yeah, there's not a bad race that. in those on that resume for 2021. Man, these people, they're making running fast seem so easy, right? Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. See what they do in the 400 hurdles, these 400 meter runners coming down to the 100, these mid-distance runners, you know, Jakob and Timothy Chariot just jogging 328s, and now we have Kip Yegon flirting with the world record. It's just wild.
We got some super chats here. Katie says, word on when Nike will be releasing Richardson merch. That I don't know, unfortunately.
I have no – I mean, we rarely see merchandise by Nike around track athletes, right? It's not – because they kind of don't really do custom content around runners. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw a little bit of it with Mo Farah, I think. Didn't Mo Farah have a couple Nike things?
Yeah. Maybe. Well, going back in the day, those Zoom Kennedys, they made spikes after Bob Kennedy. But yeah. – Travis put up that chart earlier. Not many track athletes have the what's the y-axis going up that high in terms of follower count. So maybe. I know that McLaughlin's doing stuff with New Balance, right? I've been seeing that posted everywhere.
Yeah. So. But it's hard, right? It's hard for a apparel company to invest all the way in on one individual athlete. Sha'Carri might be one of those athletes, and I could see her getting some merch eventually. I mean, I'm sure Nike is realizing, ooh, we got a gold mine in the Richardson fame.
Yeah.
So, check this out. Sydney McLaughlin on 2 days ago. New Balance, Sydney McLaughlin. SM. Hashtag NBXSM. Yeah, we have another super chat from Tom Wang.
Another one.
Dude, all these super chats. Three in one day. We didn't even tell people about it, but we're just getting it. It's organically happening. Gordon, can you bet my money on the pre-classic? I'll love to bet your money. If you want to Venmo me all your money, I will bet it. Problem is, you can't bet on pre-classic because there's no bookies out there with – I mean, I could look. I'm not sure. Maybe international. Check out Bovada or something. But, yeah, I don't see any sports lines on track and field right now. It's just
who would you bet on if you could? Who do you feel the most confident in?
Bet for a win?
Yeah, just make up your odds in your head. But who do you think most?
I would bet on a Thing Mo winning, but I wouldn't get good odds on that.
Okay.
So if I had to bet, though, I guess the best thing would be there probably would be good odds on betting.
Did you bet your house on her?
A Jamaican to beat Sha'Carri, because I bet you people would be over betting that, yeah, Sha'Carri's going to win. Sha'Carri's going to win. So like taking Elaine Thompson would probably be better odds. So I probably would do that. I'll probably hedge against my public take that Sha'Carri's going to win and bet on Elaine Thompson. That's probably what I would do.
Classic. Classic, Gordon.
Hey, you know.
On Friday, we'll talk about the other fields that haven't been released yet. So. Men's 2, men's 8. Men's 2 mile, we know that the podium is supposed to be there. So that's Ahmed, Chelimo, and Cheptegei. Triple jump shot put, we know Krause is going to be there. So that'll be exciting. And then women's 4 meter hurdles, high jump, pole vault, and then the women's distance races. There's a lot of them we don't have full fields on other than the 8 and the 15. But there's a 5,000 they have with Stefan Hassan. We don't have the full field, though. And there's a 2 mile, and then there's also North American sections in the 8 and the 15. Luckily, we'll have a show on Friday. Yeah.
We'll show on Friday.
Yeah, we'll get to it. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
There was an article, but we can talk about it Friday, or we can talk about it on Monday.
Instead, we went under the 4x1 deep dive again.
Yeah, 4x1 deep dive. We'll talk about it. We have a lot of time. Sports still going on. More podcasts. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
And we'll read you super chats if you start super chatting us. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Like, subscribe.
Super chat.
like, subscribe. I think our YouTube channel almost has 10,000 subscribers. So if you subscribe, we can get to that 10K mark. That'll be pretty cool. Right?
Yeah. Help us out. So yeah.
Help us out. Help Kevin out. And me out.
Subscribe.
And Travis.
It'll make me feel better about this endeavor. Thanks, Travis. Thanks, Colt. Thanks, Gordon. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to you guys on Friday.
See you Friday.
Boom.